Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 315. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for making these episodes to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product. And Train Heroic has a fantastic product, but they have even better people. So if you're in the market, please check them out. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Matt Gillersleeve. He's the head strength coach at the University of Buffalo. We've bounced around through social media through the years, but a guy that I respect from afar and just the way that he's going about his business as one of the up-and-comers in our profession. So I appreciate you coming on, man.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Coach.
Matt, you really got an early start. I mean, you pretty much came right out of, I think you played at Union, Mount Union, right?
Yes, sir.
We played at Mount Union, went to Akron. I think you pretty much got moved up to head strength coach pretty quick after that. And, you've gone down this road now at the University of Buffalo. I guess, I know for me, that those early years as a young head strength coach, I think, how old were you when you became a head strength coach?
23.
Yeah, so I was the same. I was 23 at South Florida, and you take lots of lumps in those first years. What was one of the early things that you had to learn to grow into the coach that you are today?
Yeah, well, I'd have to start off by saying, how much time do you got for me to answer that question? But less is more. I mean, that was at 23 years old, I was so terrified to miss something that I just did everything. I was very aware of what I didn't know, so I was insanely thirsty to learn that and to find out what I didn't know. But still, I was not going to miss a base. So, I mean, when I go back and look at my programming, man, it was just that. It was a terrified 23-year-old guy who didn't want to miss something, who didn't want to underprepare his athletes. But I can honestly say this, that since that year, since I was 23 to where I am now, I have taken something out of or cut volume or remove something or simplified somewhere every single year of my career. And since doing so, our guys' results have gotten better and better. So truly, I kind of used to think that, whatever, less is more, but less is more. Definitely had to learn that one.
Yeah, I know being in that role at such a young age, I mean, there's tons of positives with that, right? Because you don't know what you don't know, but at the same time, it's kind of whether or not you get there at 23 years old or at 40 years old, it's kind of, it can be lonely at the top, right? It can be lonely sitting in that big chair. And, you've done a great job of surrounding yourself with some good, good assistant coaches and promoting a culture of growth and education. But what were some of the things that you did early on to kind of reach out and to grow, not just in the X's and O's of strength and conditioning, but grow in the areas of managing time, people, and resources?
Yeah, I think it makes me think of a question. Someone just asked me this last week. They said, when did you know you were a good strength coach or you were a good coach? And I said, man, that's a tough question. Honestly, I think I've always thought I was a good coach, but I've never, to this day even, I've never thought I was good enough. And I think that was the powerful thing when I was 23 is I was ignorant enough to think that I could do it. 23 years old, I believed I was a good coach, but I never thought I was good enough, nor do I do to this day do I believe that. So, I mean, on average, I think I've read 50 books a year since then. I've constantly reached out to people and done those kind of things. But, I mean, you went through the same thing I went through. We didn't have 10 years to work under a Chris Doyle and absorb his program and get to learn things the easy way. We had to learn things the hard way. We had to fail fast. We had to put our ego aside and be able to say, hey, man, that didn't work. And there would be sometimes in the middle of an offseason, we'd be in week three, and I'd be like, okay, this isn't working. We're changing it. And I'd have to get up in front of our football team and say, fellas, that was a bad idea. Don't like it. It's not working. We're doing something else. And I think those are the most valuable lessons I learned at a very young age. At the same time, that's all right. It's okay to fail fast. I've honestly learned to become addicted with making mistakes, and I'm obsessed with trying to make more sometimes because that's when I've learned the most. It's just the truth. You just don't waste them.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you brought that up. I was just talking to Mike Gentry earlier today, and we were talking about, and I don't think it's so much generational, although I think, generationally, the my kids, for example, they're so scared to fail, and they go press reset on the video game when it's not going their way, but I think with you, the same thing, I agree with you is, failure is the best teacher, and you have to do that in a way. And the advantage you get as a young coach under like a Chris Doyle or Mike Gentry or whoever else is that your failures can be hidden a little bit. But yeah, when you become the head strength coach, especially at a Division I program, that your failures can end up on ESPN, it's one of those things that you got to be careful of. But so I think my statement to everybody that's listening is don't be so caught up in growing so fast so early. Absorb where you're at, and when you're fully ready, you'll get those opportunities. And some people get them earlier than others. But just because you haven't gotten your opportunity yet doesn't mean that you're not being groomed for a position down the road. But I agree with you 100%. Let's talk a little training now. I mean, just watching you from afar and seeing some of the things that you post on social media and whatnot, it seems like you're utilizing technology quite a bit. We were talking off camera about Catapult and GPS. I know you've done some auto regulation using some DBT and whatnot. Talk a little bit about how you've incorporated technology into your program and not just in a way to where it's a bunch of bells and whistles and, you're playing a video game all day long.
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, especially when we're on a public platform, is, people want all the sexy stuff. And, I think the first thing I like to say is there is a very small percentage of our athletes that utilize all those things. You know what I mean? We have a multi-level program. Which one, your first level is freaking the most basic form of body weight ISO holds. And, then you have the developmental program, you have the team program, and then you have what we call the specialization program. And that's a program that's really utilizing technology. And I think that's what coaches listening need to understand is, and that's probably something I learned too, along the way, is that if just doing a back squat 5x5 by itself or a goblet squat is good enough, why throw bands and a tendo unit on it? You don't need that trick yet. Wait till that kid's a third, fourth year, vet before you start doing those things. But I think we use technology in an interesting fashion and probably honestly a fashion that most people can. And for that specialization group that lasts, everything is auto-regulated. So any way we program using velocities. So the kind of percentage windows we've more or less created a velocity profile that's kind of to the average of our athletes, and we'll program based off of that. So, we've attached a velocity to 50, 60, 70, 80, 90%. And so as the central nervous system swings up and down on a daily basis, we're not missing it. So we'll always lift with a target velocity and a cutoff velocity, and based off, how that day is going is what we'll do. When we sprint, we'll have a stopwatch on the guys and we'll track that, and we have cutoffs. If we're doing 30-yard sprints on a certain day, if we're doing fly-in tens, if you hit your cutoff on that particular day, you're done. So, maybe on a particular lift, you might get six sprints in. On a particular one, you might do the second one, and I'm saying, all right, buddy, it's time. You're done. Go in the weight room, and we'll go get our squat in now. We're constantly doing, with jump mats, just something that we've done is testing reactive strength index. So weekly, we'll put them on a jump mat, and we'll do a form of a static jump, a counter movement jump, and an overloaded counter movement jump. And then based off of where they land on that reactive index, depends on what lift they do. And that's where you're in the specialization. So if you're elastic deficient, on that reactive strength index, and we're measuring that, we're quantifying that weekly. You'll be in the weight room and you might be doing a elastic band squat, whereas the guy who's strength deficient, he'll come in and he'll do a pause squat. So we use that technology but that information is actually being utilized on a weekly basis. We're not just taking numbers to take numbers. That's the biggest thing. I'm not going to waste my assistant's time. I'm not going to waste my time by tracking things we're not going to use. So if we're not going to use it, we're not going to track it. And so that's a, you know, that's a large answer to that, but that's kind of the gist of how we use that stuff inside the lift. And then, yeah, we're working with Catapult right now with, tracking all things, with football related stuff and still kind of getting into how we can incorporate that in actual off season training. So we're still crossing that bridge as well.
Yeah. I mean, lots to dig in there. I think, you know, I think I'll start with, obviously, you know, with like the, probably using some of Dr. Mann's research with Lincoln velocities with
absolutely,
I think the one thing that I'm always most intrigued about, and you know, you were teasing me earlier about being, you know, technology, using technology with these things. And but I have to work at it, right? I mean, I've been in this field for 25 years and 25 years ago I didn't learn about BBT. Didn't even exist 25 years ago. I think for you, how are you going about, like, I mean, you probably didn't learn about BBT in your undergrad. So, like, how are you going about setting enough time and when you just got married, you're moving, you're got a new job, all this, how do you set enough time aside for you to grow as a coach? And how are you, I mean, you can either drink it through a fire hose with the internet, or you can really become specialized with it.
There isn't time. And I think that's the answer that you need to know. Like, there is not time. You have to make time. And if it's important to you, you will. And I've done that my entire career. It's something that, you know, no, there's not time to go do an hour staff development. We don't have time today, but we make time because it's important to us. And I think that I really think that when I was first coming up, now I've always been thirsty for knowledge and actually, you said Brian Mann, like that was one of my guys that I couldn't get enough of, emailing, studying Pat Ivey, you name it. Like that's what really got me down this auto regulation loophole, or rabbit hole, I guess I should say. But to me, what I always tell my staff is reading doesn't make you special. Listening to Ron McKeefree's awesome podcast, it does not make you special, because that information, it's everywhere nowadays. It's how can you absorb it and how can you apply it? Don't tell me how you're reading this book. That's great. So is every other freaking strength coach in the country. That does not separate you. It's like breathing. If you want to separate yourself, you need to be elite at how you look at that information, how you absorb it, and then how you apply it. And that's, to me, what makes the greatest minds in our industry, is the people that aren't just reaching out and asking questions. What do you do with those answers? And I think that's what separates you, as especially as a young coach.
Well, yeah, I 100% agree with you. I wrote that down, absorb and apply. I think that's probably the title of the episode right there. I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier about that kind of fear of failure. You know, I think a lot of people are they don't want to look dumb in front of their athletes, so they don't want to put out something that maybe they're not. But I mean, when if you're robotic, then you're gonna have a robotic type of relationship. If you share your wins and your losses, then that person, that coach, is a lot easier to relate to, and and reading stuff and applying it, either if nothing else in your own training, will definitely help benefit and grow you as a coach. So I agree with that 100%. You know, you're what? How old are you now? 29 years old. I mean, even still now, I mean, there's a lot of people that you've been a head strength coach for 6 years, 7 years. You know, a lot of people want the career that you've had. You know, obviously there's a little bit of luck that goes into that. There's a lot of skill that goes into it. There's a lot of being ready when you get the opportunity and all those types of things. But what advice do you have for the young coach that's listening in terms of networking as a young coach, to get into a position like you are now?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, I hate answering those questions because I have had, I'm spoiled. I'm absurdly blessed. It's not normal to have the path that either of us took. That's just not normal. And I think that I always related back to, I was talking to a coach that I respect a lot, and that coach is making a lot of money, a lot more money than I'm making today. And he said to me, and I just guess I didn't realize it, but he said, "Hey, you know what, Sleeve?" He said, "The first time I ever made more than $43,000 a year was when I was 44 years old."
Yeah.
And it just blew my mind to just think about, like, that dude's grit and what he was willing to sacrifice and put on the shelf. And had he not done that and paid his dues all that time, he would have never been in the situation he is today, which once again is making a, you know, a significant chunk of change and an opportunity to change a lot of different lives. So patience, you know, just being patient and doing those things. Like, I just, that speaks volumes to me. And I think I probably referred to that, and that I had that conversation probably 3 months ago. I probably referred to it about 25 times, just how, for whatever reason, how powerful that is to me. But yeah, I mean, you know, you got a network, but at the same time, I think that our idea of networking in this industry is a little skewed. If you write me a letter or send me one email, that's not networking. You haven't, I don't know who you are. You have to develop relationships, and that's, you know, yeah, you go visit one time and then you write a letter and then you check in at Christmas and then you say, hey, can I come back? And once, you know, you have to take three or four kind of those opportunities. Can I get lunch with you at a conference? And to me, that's what I try to tell my guys is don't just sit there and reach out to people and think that's networking. It's not. You're no better off than before. I'd rather quality over quantity. I'd rather have 25 amazing people in this industry that know who I am, that I can go and sleep on their couch and that's normal, versus having 500 people who go, I think I know that guy. I think I talked to him one time. So I think some of our perceptions of networking, I don't think is quite accurate or realistic either. And you're gonna have to do those things to move on in this industry.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. I think the thing that gets missed a lot of times is you, as the young coach, you can still bring value, right? You know, and that could be as little as even liking a post or something, to as much as here's a guy that just got done telling you that he's thirsty for knowledge, nonstop, can't consume enough, talking about VBT or GPS or whatever. Well, how about whatever the latest article is, how about you download that and send it to him and just say, hey, I heard you speaking on this podcast or this clinic or whatever. This is something I found. I don't know if you've seen it. Here you go.
Sure.
Guys that did that, women that did that, they always stood out to me, you know. Yeah. In the process. And I think you gotta stand out amongst the crowd, because just like you, at this point now, I literally get over 200 emails a day. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Yep.
I have to filter through that pretty quick, you know? And so, I agree with you.
Around every day. I think that's one thing too, that coaches think about, who else can they network with? Well, if you're working with a great set of five coaches or whoever it is, those five coaches aren't going to be there forever. If you're so consumed about networking at other schools and you're not worried about being where your feet are right now and busting your ass for those people, that's your best chance. I mean, right. the football coaches that get to see you, and then the strength coaches that you're working with, or whatever coaches you are whatever coaches you're around, impress those people first, start there, and then branch out.
Great point. I think, and to build off of that, I think, you've got to invest in the people that you surround yourself with, be it your staff, be it your administrators, be it your coaches, on a daily basis. And you got to do and prepare yourself for the opportunities that would come later on down the road. And I think you're 100% right. Like, me getting an opportunity at 22 years old to go be the head strength coach in NFL Europe, or 23 years old to be the head strength coach at South Florida, or you to be 23 years old and be the head strength coach at Akron, that was luck. That was luck.
No doubt.
It was complete luck for me. But at the same time, you were prepared to take on the responsibility, you know, and that meant that you probably, you asked a million questions, you read a million books, you reached out to a million different programs, so that when you got that opportunity, you made the most of it, you know. And I hate when I hear, oh, that person got that job just because of the color of their skin, or because they're a female, or because they're, they played ball at this such and such university. You're not going to, in this field, you're not going to keep it unless you're good. You know, you're not going to keep the job. So you've got to be prepared, and you got to make the most of opportunities. And I think that's so important.
No doubt.
I know, one of the things that I really enjoyed, about what you've done online and whatnot is, I think you used to put up like your staff meetings or whatever, like videos, right? And just to see the way that you would empower the people around you to either contribute to that body of knowledge or to or find a way to separate themselves amongst the pack or find a niche that they could be the expert in. Talk a little bit about why that's important to you and how other coaches can empower their people.
Yeah. I think that some people, strength coaches, some people, you know, they want the feeling of, if I leave this room, if I'm not here, it's going to be, all hell's going to break loose and there's going to be chaos everywhere. And I'm the complete opposite. I want to be able for my assistants to take over that weight room and for it to be not one molecule different. It's the exact same training session if I was there as if I wasn't there. And to me, it's because I care about my athletes, and I truly care about my athletes. I want to, you know, I think about, okay, if I become a better coach and I focus all this time on me, I got two eyes. I'm only one coach. If I can get my, if I can make my two assistants better and my four interns better, and they become elite level coaches, what is going to happen to our results? What is going to happen to our program? And then at the end of the day, what's going to happen to our industry? You know, you talk about wanting to impact the industry. If you got six coaches that all go out and become coaches somewhere else that are around six others, you've made some real change. And so to me, you know, one, empowering, I think, just for the health of life. I think it's huge just to, so you're not constantly doing everything. I love getting different perspectives. I try to learn from everybody I have around me. And if I'm sitting there trying to call the shots all the time, I'm not getting people's opinions. So I try to keep as open of an environment as I can, because once again, I truly believe it's what's best for our program. I truly believe it's what's best for our kids. So as much as humanly possible, I'm trying to empower, and it's growing opportunities, and it's a way to try to perfect the system and see how we're doing it and can we do it better. And I don't see a downside to doing it, you know. So it's been a huge part. But I think you could probably agree, as a young coach, 23 years old, you probably weren't as empowering as you are now. And I don't think I was either. So it's a learned thing, because you have a way you want things to get done. And when that criteria is not met, you know, and that's going to happen when you empower people, but you fail fast. That's why I coach my guys all the time. Just fail fast. We're going to make mistakes. Mistakes are okay. We don't waste mistakes. And as long as we're doing that, I think we're moving up the ladder.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's a lesson that I have to fight with, because I'm a micromanager by trade. I mean, that's who I am. But I had a coach, you know, once tell me, you know, and this stuck with me, because I was, you know, I didn't want to go on vacation. I didn't want to leave the weight room. I wanted to control every aspect. You know, he's like, well, you know, you got four assistant coaches, you know, who coaches them? And I'm like, I coach them. And he goes, well, then you must not be a very good coach if you're not willing to leave. Yeah. And it really stuck with me that, you know, we have, you know, every coach, head coach that I've ever worked for is maybe a better coach. And the ones that are maybe the best are the ones that I'm the most loyal to, you know, and we have an obligation to coach our coaches just as much as we coach our athletes. And, you know, bringing in and hiring the right personality types around you to make it so that you're bringing value to your program. I talk a lot about this, you know, in some presentations and on this show, about being a lion, an otter, a beaver, a retriever. And the lion, you know, if you just bring in a bunch of lions, you're just going to fight in a cage all day long, you know. And that's what most people think. They bring in people like them because they think that they're good. Well, that's not reaching. Like, the bottom line is that I can relate to everybody, but I don't relate to maybe that California kicker as much as I would relate to that Midwest freaking linebacker, you know. Yeah. And I got to bring in people to surround our players with multiple personalities that they feel like they can come to any one of us and get what they need. And yeah, I think that's so important. But I agree with you, man. We end the show with some resources here. Give us best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Tommy Moffitt, 2011. It's not what you look at, it's what you see. It's not what you listen to, it's what you hear. Probably took me a little while to really know what that meant, but I think that goes back to what I was saying about just the, you know, absorb and apply. And, you know, it was when he said it to me, I was watching a kid do power cleans. In that point in time. But I mean, you know, the whole point is, you know, are you listening to me, or are you hearing what I'm saying? Are you digesting what I'm saying? Are you really are you just reading that article, or are you getting something out of that article? I can hire anybody off the street to come watch a kid sprint. Can you see that he has, you know, excessive valgus knee bend? Can you see that his toe off is incorrect? Can you see that he can't brace his core? Can you see those things? So I think in the coaching world, and really probably in any industry, I think those are very powerful words.
Oh, that's awesome. Tommy's great for the one-liners, isn't he?
He is, and he's got a ton of them.
Give us a book, app, website recommendation.
I would say, and once again, I'm going to give us a really good rating here, and I don't get any kickback for this, but I told you I'm a big reader. I would say the most powerful thing that at least career-wise, is Altus. I think Altus is unbelievable. They have a short sprints course, and it is $150, which I think is absurdly low. After taking it, as far as what's actually on it, as far as the amount of information, the quality of that information, and the the absorbability of that information, just how well it's presented, I honestly don't think you can afford not to do it as a coach. And especially in our industry, you know, a lot of people say strength is king. I say movement is king. I think movement is such a missed piece in our industry, because I think most coaches are scared to learn it. It's like the stock market, right? Like, people don't know the stock market because they just don't want to take the time to learn it. I feel like sprinting is that same way. Like, coaches are like, oh, squats, bench, clean, let's go. But then we talk about the on-field stuff, and coaches are just scared to learn it. I think that is such a friendly environment to learn it. So Altus in general, but then they have a few courses. I've taken two of them, but the Altus short sprint course, I think, is a very good way to learn a lot of those things that I think a lot of books kind of miss, and it's very good.
That's awesome. I know you said that you don't really use too many apps or websites or whatnot, right?
Yeah, not particularly. And that, that's that. If I had to recommend a website, that would be where I would say to start.
Well, man, like I said on the beginning, ultimately this field is all about putting your head down and grinding and really caring about your athletes. And, you and I have talked a handful of times through the years, but to watch you from afar and see how much you invest in your players, invest in your staff, and continually strive to improve yourself as a coach, comes through. And just appreciate you sharing with everybody and coming on the show, man.
I appreciate you paving the way.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.